Hey folks, Eric from Hit Subscribe here. It's been a few weeks, and this is actually my last broadcast, if you will, from South Padre Island. We are moving on to the Tampa region this Saturday, so that'll be fun. It also might be the last time I do this as a Facebook Live. People just don't seem to come to this venue for business all that much. Sometimes the viewer metrics here are okay, but often not the best. And I do have a community of if that interests any, we have a community where we discuss these sort of things. And if that interests you, I can comment in the comments later. But I think that community just launched, well, I know that community just launched a go live feature. And I think what I'm going to do is move this operation over there and go live once a week in the community with something to talk about. And then either people, join in and ask questions and have a discussion, or I just do a video like this. So, all that said, I will tackle possibly the last topic in this venue, and that is how do you handle clients wanting bug fixes after the contract is over? So, for those of you, this is very software specific, but those of you maybe watching that aren't in that world, let me generalize a bit. The idea here is you've engaged in some kind of custom development project, like you're working on software for a client, and then that relationship ends. And once that relationship is over and you think you're done, the client comes out of nowhere and demands bug fixes. Perhaps, I forget the exact context here, but perhaps is even, I don't know if threatening legal action, but demanding it and saying, you owe me this. It's part of what you did. And you think, no, it isn't. So how do you handle that situation? If I were going to generalize this, this could come up in a lot of contexts as well. Anything where you're maybe building or creating some form of, labor for the client. So I don't know, maybe you're a professional editor and the client has this backlog of things that you are tasked with editing, but they're paying you time and materials and you didn't get to all of them, and the client later says, wait a minute, some of this isn't done. You could probably come up with examples in all sorts of different fields. The common denominator here that I'll get to in a bit is that this is going to be pretty exclusive to kind of custom work or staff augmentation, time and materials, that sort of thing. So, how would one handle this kind of misalignment? The first thing I would suggest doing is going back in, if you have a contract of any kind, see where in the contract, if at all, this sort of thing is defined. I'll throw this up on YouTube later. I am not personally of the opinion that contracts actually matter with this type of work between you and an asymmetrically large client who will always win every time if they were going to pursue you legally, but by the way, wouldn't because it wouldn't be worth the legal fees. So it's not that the contract is going to, be something you can hold up and it will stand up in court. But if you have a contract and you can send that over as pretty compelling proof that what they're asking for is out of bounds. And just, say it in probably friendly fashion, hopefully before this is escalated, like, FYI, I'm attaching your contract. It does cover this if you'll refer to section whatever. This is beyond the scope of the engagement, but maybe I can help and maybe we can discuss a brief engagement where I come in and help out here. One thing to bear in mind is this tends to be pretty effective because whether the person is an employee of the of company or, a lot of freelancers, we tend to think of contracts as like these magical spells. They're really about prevention more than anything else. And what you're doing is prevention, like, hey, I have a contract. So that can be effective because the employee that you're talking to, the person who's telling you that you owe them additional work, probably also is a little bit cowed by contracts. So that's pretty bulletproof. If you have it in the contract and it very clearly states that what they're asking for is out of bounds, you are going to win that 99 times out of 100, and they'll back down. More likely is the case that either you don't have a contract or you don't have a statement of work or anything that's specified this. Maybe you don't have it at all, or maybe just when you were writing up your proposal or whatever you sent to them, you didn't actually say what would happen in the event of bugs. That's much more common that this is sort of ambiguous. You understood one thing, the client understood another, and now here they are back with this misunderstanding. That's a tougher situation because. You might not have anything that definitive to point to. Now, if I were you in this situation, I would go back and look for anything in the form of past email communications, or if you've recorded them, like Zoom calls or something, anything where there's implications about the situation. So, for instance, if you had an email at one point to them where you said, all right, here's what I'm going to do. And you listed out a number of things. And then in the follow-up thread, you mentioned something like, oh, we can always re-engage later if you find bugs or something. You could go point to that and say, like, hey, we discussed this. Like, look, right here, you know, you didn't disagree with this or anything. So any kind of paper trail or record trail, even if it's not a contract or official statement of work, can also help you here. Now, that said, it'll probably come up a lot, especially in the early going as you're building battle scars dealing with this sort of thing, that you don't have anything whatsoever. There's just, you know, misalignment. This is where it kind of is a judgment call. Now, if it were me personally, I've built my career for a pretty long time on taking the attitude of, I'd rather not argue about this and just give in for now than get down into the weeds here. So what I would probably do is, instead of immediately starting to argue, if I couldn't find anything definitive about it, I would say something like, you know, let me take a look at these bugs, and then maybe I'd pick, I don't know, a few of them out and say, hey, these seem pretty critical. Tell you what, let me fix these. But to my understanding, and, you know, my apologies for not communicating this, I'm considering this work out of scope. So I feel like I'm doing free work here, but it's on me. I didn't specify that. So let me fix a few of the most important ones. And then let's talk about, you know, scoping out a potential project or something for the next set of bug fixes. If you don't want to do that, maybe you're tired of this client engagement, you can achieve the same sort of thing by simply saying, you know, here's a 20% refund or something. In either case, what you're doing here is essentially saying of a form, I'm willing to pay you not to have this argument. That's powerful when you do that, assuming you're able to do that. I am a big believer in being able to do that because it sort of puts the person about arguing about scope and what's right and wrong on their back foot, because what you're saying is like, look, I don't have time for you, little person. Here's some money. Just leave me alone. And that gets people to back down actually pretty effectively because they feel silly. It's not going to work every time, but in my experience, it works the overwhelming majority of the time. So you take the high road and you say like, look, this wasn't what we agreed to as far as I'm concerned, but I, you know, I should have made it much more explicitly clear. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you free stuff and then let's discuss what to do next. If that doesn't work, and I guess they're demanding that you just do labor indefinitely because anything that they call a bug is going to be something that they demand of you. So you're worried about like giving them an inch and they'll take a mile. Number one, if you've set the boundary, first of all, but they come back and say, no, that's unacceptable. You have to fix all of the bugs or something. Then you could just counter with, I don't agree. I'll fix none of the bugs. I mean, so I think usually that kind of narrative where you compromise will work. But if it doesn't, given that there's no paper trail or scope or anything like that, at that point, I'd start to blow them off. If it becomes clear that they're demanding indefinite bug fixes forever because they say it's a bug, I would blow them off, but I'd explain it and say, listen, you've got to understand what you're claiming here is that anytime you decide from now to eternity that you consider something to be a bug, you want me to do labor without compensating me. And that doesn't sound like a good idea to me. It sounds like it's an easy situation to take advantage of. So no, I'm not going to agree to that. I'm sorry. This is pretty rare and pretty like far down the rabbit hole. Almost certainly what's going to happen is you're going to toss out, you know, this, let me do a few, and then we'll kind of figure out what's next. They might gripe about it and saber rattle a bit, but they'll agree to it. So that's the short term. That's how to kind of get out of the situation. And, you know, one thing I'll throw in there when it comes to bugs or anything that they're couching as defect in your work product, the lens through which I'd look at this too is how badly are they bleeding? So if you do a website build and, you know, it's a week after the engagement ends and the website just goes down due to some like negligence on your part, that's a much different thing than some customer coming up a year later and being like, I don't like the way this button looks on the website. So use your own kind of judgment. Setting aside who's right and wrong or the particulars, is their position understandable? Are they reaching out to you because, oh my goodness, my website is down? Like, could you understand why they're frustrated or upset or making these demands? And then view it through that lens. try to make them whole and try to like think of the root cause of what's going on there. So if they're saying, my website's down, it crashed, you did this wrong, and here's these other 80 things I think you should fix too. Understand that what's probably happened is their website went down, so they got angry and they started making this huge war chest of gripes they had because the website went down, and now they're coming at you with that. So even though somewhere way down the list, all these look like nitpicking, understand there was some original motivation there that does make sense on their part. So negotiate to some kind of detent in the short term, you know, hey, I'm going to fix these showstoppers, but understand we didn't actually agree to this. These are on me. The rest I'm not going to do. I'm sorry. We can talk about that later. Let's make you whole first. No charge. So come up with a good narrative, do the right thing, fix their stuff, and then set boundaries on the rest. Now, in the medium term, once all the dust settles, I would retrospect on this and say, how did this come up? Like, what didn't I make clear in my statement of work or my contract? How could I do better next time? And usually that's going to mean better defining scope. So on a custom build, after this has come up once, I bet you're going to be specific about what happens in the event of a defect. And, you know, you could do something like say, I'll build you this website and I'll fix any bugs that come up in perpetuity and make that one of your proposal options and just quote it as a really high price. And then have a secondary option that says, you know, I'll build you this thing and any bugs that you find in the first 2 weeks, I'll fix. And then after that, we're done. Now you're giving them the choice as to which of those arrangements they want. So they're going to pick one and they're going to be in no position later to argue with you. So if you get better at defining scope of the things that you're doing, and then you actually give the client the autonomy to say, I can either pay more for this sort of Cadillac indefinite support, or I'm going to go the cheap route and, you know, not worry about the long-term support. Well, now it's really on them. And you'd be surprised how infrequently people will argue about something like that. They don't tend to come and say, even though I picked the cheaper option, I'm demanding the more expensive one. I mean, it just looks ridiculous. So that's, you know, I guess some tactics on how to better define scope. But, you know, whatever we're talking about here, when you feel that pain, don't forget that and just, you know, chalk it up to past experience. Like, do kind of a post-mortem. Why did this happen? And how would I have to change the nature of my engagements to make sure it doesn't happen again? That's the medium term. In the long term, I mentioned this in the beginning, if you're having what I'll call scope arguments, it's almost certainly because you are doing a time and materials or staff augmentation sort of deliverable, more so than a tangible thing. Now, the example I tossed out there was a website build, and that's an interesting one because you could say the deliverable is that this website exists at the time that we hand it off. And you could make an argument that bug fixes for the website are not really in scope there. It's a lot easier to do if you're flat pricing and saying, I'll build you this thing for $10,000. Now, if you're doing a website build and you say, my hourly rate is $100 an hour, and I'm just going to run the meter and stick a hole in your pocket, and I'll let you know when the money stops falling out, here's your bill. Now, if you're the client, the scope is kind of ill-defined more on its face, meaning you're not saying, I'm going to build you this thing with these properties and deliver it for this rate. You're saying, I'm going to do stuff for a while and I'll let you know how much you owe me in the end. Once you're in that paradigm in time and materials, hourly billing, it gets a lot easier for the client to come in and argue about what you were doing during your hours and what should have been accomplished and what shouldn't have been. Whereas if you're saying, I will deliver you a website, it'll have four landing pages and this, that, and the other, and it'll be $10,000. Then some of the things, you know, if the website is fundamentally defective, you know, they might call that a bug, or they might just say that you failed to deliver on your agreed deliverable, which is a different kind of thing. But they're going to be less inclined to nitpick at you because they're buying something that's more productized. So my point is, time and materials engagement, the nature of that is you sort of agree to the scope via estimates, but then you're negotiating the whole way as you're working. You're also simulating employment where they're paying you, you know, by unit of time. So employees with their employers, there's a lot more give and take about what's in scope and what should be done by whom. It's a very tight back and forth kind of relationship. Hopefully it doesn't become contentious, but it's easy for it to. You should have stayed late when that, you know, thing happened. We don't ask you to work overtime very often or whatever. You know, did you leave early Friday when you should have been doing the whatevers? Like, the nature of a time and materials relationship much more lends itself to this sort of bickering, either during or after the contract. So what I'm getting at here is, over the long haul, if you want to get away from this type of thing, you want to deliver something that's repeatable, the same kind of well-defined deliverable over and over again. Because number one, there are fewer arguments about scope with a well-defined deliverable. But number two, you get so experienced with it that you learn all of the different things that can go on, and you start to anticipate those in advance. You bake them into your pricing, or you have an FAQ where you say, look, you know, I do these three things, but not this fourth. I know you're going to ask about it. People do. It's out of scope. So with a more polished, productized type of deliverable or offering, this just doesn't come up, because you're the one defining things for the client. You're telling them what's in scope and what's out, how this is going to work, et cetera. And when that happens, it's not that disagreements over some aspect of scope or the details or rules of your offering will never come up. They just come up a lot less frequently, and your client is much less experienced at handling them than you are. So like in HitSubscribe's world of blog posts and our content models and offerings, we have, you know, videos, explainers, collaterals, all kinds of things that we send to clients. And when something comes up where, you know, I didn't understand how this works, number one, what we generally do is just say, okay, we should have been clearer with our collateral. So this first time, you know, we'll eat the cost on that. But, you know, for subsequent times, that doesn't really come up. And if it did, we'd just say, you know, I'm sorry, this is pretty clear. So with that, you know, as an example, I will say that this type of thing, it isn't that it never comes up in that line of work for that business, but when it does, there's a pretty clear workflow that our account management folks have to work through, and there's just not a lot of back and forth. You know, okay, first time, here you go for free. After that, no, I'm sorry. And that's just kind of it. So there isn't argument. It comes up pretty rarely, and it's pretty easily resolved whenever it does. So I would work towards something like that in order to avoid this sort of thing in the long term. And remember, kind of the closer you mimic or approximate the employment relationship, the more likely something like this is to come up, just by the nature of that tight-knit, ill-defined custom work. When you're doing things that are custom and unprecedented, there are going to be more disagreements than when you're, you know, walking a well-traveled path that you're experienced with. So hopefully that helps, and I will catch you next time.